You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. In the northern San Fernando Valley, right where the 5 and the 405 meet, is the Ararat Nursing Facility. It sits atop 10.5 acres, well-landscaped with deciduous trees. It's got white buildings with red Spanish terracotta tile roofs. That's what it looks like from the outside, but you can't go in. If you don't live or work there right now, you can't go inside. Not today, not for a while. That's been true for months amid California's safer-at-home orders. At one point, while more than half of all deaths from COVID-19 in Los Angeles were residents and staff in places such as assisted living and nursing homes. And so, at Ararat, visiting mom or dad right now is not an option. Margarita Kachichian is the director over at Ararat. She says staff try to fill the void left by missing family.
Now you can't actually come in and see your loved one and you don't know how they're doing. It's terrifying. So we filled in those shoes as the family members of the residents rather than, you know, our residents feeling the loss of their loved ones completely by being in the facility while everybody else is out.
Fewer people are dying in nursing homes now than were a few months ago, and this place has done relatively well. Only about a dozen infections. That's what success looks like these days. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb's been reporting on what it's like to have your loved one in a nursing home, what it's like to lose someone as well. And he joins me right now. Hey, Benjamin.
Hello, Steve.
So some nursing homes have had bad outbreaks. We know that. We've seen that. Others, like Ararat, have avoided that. Why are so many nursing homes doing differently? Why is there such a wide range here?
Well, back in March, Ararat did something that other nursing homes really didn't do. They took measures before the state and the county mandated them. So things like wearing masks, temperature checks. And if you ask Margarita, she says they haven't had a big outbreak because she thinks they've taken these extra precautions. She explained to me what she's doing now for her community.
We're doing weekly full facility testing. So every single week, we're testing over 550 people in our facility for preventative reasons and to make sure that in case anybody tests positive, we capture it immediately, we isolate, we quarantine, we do everything we possibly do to make sure nobody else gets sick or nobody actually gets sick.
You can hear right there, Steve, they're paying a lot of attention to what's happening inside the facility. And at least for one family member I spoke to, that's what it looks like for him too. It's a place that's paying extra attention to his parents. Johanna Shahan's mother is 92 years old. She has Parkinson's, also has dementia. And before the outbreak, Johanna had her in another facility in Pasadena. Now, he wouldn't share the name with me, but he did share this story about why he moved her to Ararat and said it's an example of what takes place at some nursing homes across the greater LA area.
I remember one time I walked in there and I saw this lady in the hallway in a wheelchair, and she was kind of halfway bent over and she did not look well. And I thought to myself, my God, where's her family? Why are they allowing this? And I'm walking towards my mom's room. Then I did a double take and it was my mom. I freaked out.
Mm-hmm. Steve, this is a family that really takes care of their parents, pays a lot of attention, a lot of visits to see them normally. Johanna's father is also at Ararat. He's in the assisted living wing. And his parents have been married for more than 6 decades. So normally his father, who would go with his walker, he'd walk over and spend some time with his wife. But this is the cruelty of this virus, right? Because of COVID-19, Johanna's dad can't walk over and see his mom. Things are shut down even inside the facility. And that affects Johanna and his siblings' relationship with their parents.
There are certain things that I have to do for my mom. She always liked to take care of herself with her nails and her face and stuff like that. So I always used to go there and do that for her. And, you know, it changes their attitude. It makes them feel better about themselves.
It's that personal touch, those personal stories for this family that has really made the separation super hard.
Yeah, it's so challenging in these perilous times, Benjamin. So how are nursing homes adapting to try and allow families to spend time together, at least somehow?
Well, nursing homes are adapting a lot like other segments of society are adapting, all right? For now, at least in LA County, it's almost entirely virtual. So FaceTime, WhatsApp, you've got the caregivers that are running those applications, letting family members talk with their loved ones. There's also window visits too. I mean, so you bring mom to the window of her room and then you call her on the phone, but it's just not the same. I spoke with several people who have family members that are living in nursing homes, and physical touch kept coming up over and over again as the big thing they're missing. And just fear that they may not get to spend time with their mothers, their fathers, their grandparents, their loved ones in person ever again. Denise Hovsepian has had her mother at Ararat for more than 6 years.
My mom turned 99. She'll be 100 in March. And I feel like, okay, how much longer am I going to have her? And then not being able to have any physical contact with her has been extremely difficult. I just want to, you know, give her a hug and a kiss and hold her hand or, you know, have some personal contact with her. That part's difficult. But the window visits help knowing that I'm seeing her. But, you know, I just don't know. Maybe I'll never be able to touch her again or, you know, hold her hand. So it is difficult. It is hard.
Incredibly hard for families, but also for facilities, right? I mean, they're being cautious, as you can imagine, about expanding in-person visits. The LA Jewish Home, for example, which manages several nursing facilities in the LA area, they're waiting for guidance for outdoor visits from the county. The state has begun to allow these. There's some guidance that was issued a couple days ago, and some in the Bay Area have begun to allow actual outdoor visits, but only under a limited basis. So things are really moving slowly on that front.
You hit the nail on the head. It's the cruelty of this disease, Benjamin, and what gives us what we have right now. And I know it's because of the fact that a lot of nursing homes are having these tragic experiences, not necessarily at Ararat, which has found some success, but at other places where staff and residents are getting sick and they're dying.
Yeah, and the median age of a person who's died from COVID-19, it's 78 years old. You've got older people mostly that are living in assisted living or nursing homes. It's just a recipe for potentially disaster and tragedy. And unfortunately, that's what happened to the Saldana family. I had the chance to speak with Jackie Saldana over the phone. Her father, Ricardo, died in one of LA County's nursing homes. It's called Glen Haven Healthcare. It's in Glendale. He was 77 years old, so right around that median age. Toward the end of his life, he was immobile, and his daughter, Jackie, said he also had suffered a stroke.
My father was a great person. He was a great family man. And things need to change the way you treat people in there, because a lot of people die horribly. My dad didn't even know what hit him, you know, and he passed away alone without his family there.
You heard her say there, he passed away alone without his family there.
Yeah.
The Saldana family is suing Glen Haven for abuse and willful negligence, among some other things. And they blame the facility for not doing enough to protect the health of their residents, preventing staff, for example, from wearing face masks and gloves in the early days of the pandemic. And also, they claim downplaying the threat of the virus. Now, this is just one of the first lawsuits filed in LA against the nursing home. Jackie's family attorney is a man named Scott Glovsky. And he says that if you look at how death rates in nursing homes, while they're still high, are beginning to level out now, it's proof that perhaps much of this could have been prevented.
If we look at what's happening now, the deaths in nursing homes have gone down dramatically. And that's because the nursing homes were forced, as a result of what's happened, of all the deaths, to actually be proactive and take appropriate measures to protect their residents.
So you can hear right there, liability in his mind is very clear. In court documents, attorneys for Glen Haven have maintained the provider is immune from liability under federal law because essentially, and I'm going to parse some legalese here, COVID-19 constitutes a federal health emergency and there are laws that absolve them from liability. Now, I also reached out to Glen Haven. They have not responded to calls and emails requesting comments. I should also point out that LA County is investigating a number of claims as well of problematic nursing homes. And to do this, it's put Max Huntsman, who Steve, you might recall, is the county inspector general. He normally looks at misconduct and abuse in the county's jails. Well, he's going to be the inspector general for nursing homes now. His office is supposed to recommend how the county can do a better job overseeing nursing homes and to make sure that they're keeping everyone safe. And he's going to have a report for some initial findings in the coming weeks.
Well, we'll talk about that, obviously, when the report comes out. KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb. Benjamin, thanks.
Anytime, Steve.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Moving on now with KCRW's Greater LA, and coronavirus cases in LA County continue to rise at rates that make public health officials and state officials, certainly medical officials, very, very nervous. Preventive measures such as closing indoor restaurants, nail salons, hair salons, gyms, those measures are back in place to hopefully stabilize the numbers. That is a big hope, and a lot of fingers are crossed. Many hospitals are already struggling to deal with the onslaught of patients suffering from COVID-19. In some places, every bed is full, every ventilator is taken, doctors and nurses, custodial staff working around the clock to ensure the welfare of patients. Erin McIntosh is a rapid response nurse at Riverside Community Hospital and a local union steward of SEIU 121. Erin, welcome.
Thank you.
And Ronnie Cosmall has been a nurse at Pacifica Hospital out in the San Fernando Valley and Sun Valley. Ronnie, how are you?
I'm great, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Erin, I want to start with you. Riverside specifically has seen particularly high case numbers of COVID for some time now. Tell us what it's like over there at your place, and you know, take us through what a day is like for you.
So, yes, you mentioned that I'm a rapid response nurse. I'm also a code blue nurse. So I see the worst of the worst. I see these COVID patients, and they are unexpected. They crash rather quickly. One minute they're talking, and the next minute they're on life support. It's unlike anything that I've seen in my career. And unfortunately, I feel that we've known about coronavirus now since January. So we've had 6 months to prepare and build up the staff and support and supplies that we need to take care of our patients. But that doesn't seem to be happening. And because of the lack of support, our nurses are just exhausted. And with this exhaustion comes bad outcomes. And that's where I come in. I'm the nurse that sees the worst of the worst.
Explain what the worst, you said life support. So explain the worst of the worst and how bad it can get. I mean, are you talking about a nursing shortage? Are you talking about the fact that maybe there's not enough PPE? What is it that's going on at the hospital that really concerns you?
I think what really concerns me is patient safety. Overall, we just don't have the support staff and the staff that we need to safely take care of our patients. And as nurses, we all went into this career because we want to do a good job. We want to be able to help these patients that need our help. But without the right amount of staff, the right amount of support that we need to safely take care of them, they have bad outcomes. And nobody wants to feel like they're doing not a good job. And at the end of the day, all of us nurses are left feeling like we're not enough. And, you know, it's causing burnout, and it's causing, when I say bad outcomes, patients are, you know, they're not doing the best that they can because the nurses don't have the appropriate amount of time to dedicate to their patients. For example, I had a scenario where, you know, nurses are given 3 gowns and they have 4 patients and they're told to cluster their care. And what that means is you have to go into your patient's room and do everything for your patient. You have to bathe them, you have to feed them, you have to give them their medications, help them to the bathroom. And doing all of these things along with your assessments can leave you in the patient's room for an hour. When you're in one patient's room for an hour, you're neglecting your other patients. If we had more support to check on those patients, then maybe they will find those subtle clues that nurses are well-trained to pick up on that could prevent something like a patient not being able to breathe appropriately so that they stop breathing. And when I talk about life support, what I mean is a patient being on a ventilator, being on medications that help keep their blood pressure up, and full support from medications.
You guys staged a strike, a 10-day strike not too long ago. The registered nurses at your hospital, Riverside Community, you advocated and were an active participant. This is obviously such a tenuous moment for nurses to do that, to not work when healthcare workers are so essential. I mean, what were the nurses there looking to accomplish with the strike? And could, I mean, you know, at a time like this, how, I mean, is I'm sure you guys are exhausted, But I mean, what does it do you think?
So I understand what you're saying. And we did get a lot of backlash for people saying that we shouldn't strike during a pandemic. But ultimately, we're concerned for our community. A lot of us live in Riverside. And so this is the hospital that we're going to be going to. And at a time when COVID hit, I thought that our hospital was going to be revving up the support, giving us more resources. They cut us. They cut registry. They cut per diem. And this left us working with skeleton crews. And I had mentioned to you before, you know, I see the worst of the worst. I saw an increase in our code numbers because the nurses didn't have the appropriate support that they needed. So we were striking because of a mediation agreement that we had with the hospital that was back in March of 2019 that basically held the hospital accountable for having the appropriate amount of staff. And that doesn't just include staff to keep us in ratio, but staff to give us breaks also. Every single one of us nurses has gone 12 hours without a break. And while that may sound like something simple to you, it also means that breastfeeding mothers don't have time to pump and their milk dries up. So it's a big deal, and it is against the law. So we were hoping to hold the hospital accountable for all of these things and to prevent further bad outcomes.
To be fair, and obviously they're not here represented on the air, but I will read part of a statement that Riverside Community said in response to the strike. And they said, quote, "At a time when hundreds of hospitals across the country are laying off and furloughing caregivers because of significant declines in patient volumes, Riverside Community Hospital has not laid off or has furloughed a single caregiver due to the pandemic." And they said that they also have implemented a pandemic pay program, which has benefited many of the colleagues. What do you say to that when they come out with a statement like that? This is just a few weeks ago.
So I know that's their statement. And what those employees that they're talking about that were hired, it doesn't account for the many, many nurses that have quit due to unsafe staffing and situations. And it also doesn't talk about how they had canceled all registry and all travelers, like I talked about, and per diem staff. So we were running on skeleton crews. And when they talk about the pandemic pay, hardly any of us benefited from that pandemic pay. It was more for people in outpatient surgery centers. So I felt that they could have done more for our nurses and for our patients.
And obviously, you're back at work and it's ongoing, right? Do you foresee doing anything like that again?
I feel that the hospital's already preparing and they're pushing us into another strike.
Ronnie, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You just ended your time at Pacifica over in Sun Valley. What have the last few weeks, you've been there for months, right? What have the last few weeks been like for you?
Yeah, so first of all, I want to say, Aaron, wow, you expressed yourself so eloquently, and it's really an honor to be on the program with you. And I send you strength and support from another nurse in the city, and thank you guys so much for what you're doing. I left a 15-year career as an OR nurse in plastic surgery to become a COVID nurse. And I was placed at Pacifica Hospital through my registry in April. So I've been there pretty much since we first opened the COVID ward. And there's definitely been ups and downs. It was definitely a crazy time at the beginning. We were all just trying to figure out, how do we care for these patients? And I will definitely echo what Aaron said. You don't know when these patients are going to turn. You can have someone that seems fine 1 minute and they're talking and you're looking at their oxygen saturation on the monitors and you're watching it dropping and dropping and dropping, but they seemingly feel fine. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're rushing to call her team, the rapid response team, to get them on a ventilator. And then it's a really, really uphill battle from there. So we've definitely had, you know, during the beginning, March, April, were really crazy times. Then we kind of hit a lull when everyone was home and there was social distancing and we were on lockdown. We felt it. We were able to close our COVID tent, we were able to close one out of our two units. We were dwindling down to single numbers, and it was so exciting. And now it's just been this past week in particular, the past 2 weeks have been the worst I've ever seen it. I mean, we are at capacity plus. We are taking critical care patients into non-critical care units, and we're doing the best we can. And what my frustration is particularly is that the public isn't supporting us, that as people like Aaron and people like myself, we're putting our lives on the line, we're exhausted, we're fighting every day to keep these patients alive, to get them out of the hospital. And meanwhile, you know, people don't believe in wearing masks and they don't believe in staying home. And, you know, to me, that's my frustration.
How have you guys, you said the past couple of weeks have been just incredibly busy and, you know, off the rails. What does that look like? You're talking about like people in ICU, you're talking about people on life support. There's nowhere else for anybody to go. You're turning away patients. What does that mean?
So at first we had our COVID tents where we screen patients. Then we had one COVID unit. Then we opened a second COVID unit. We were trying to keep COVID patients out of the ICU. The ICU has turned into basically an entire COVID unit where all of the patients are COVID positive now in the ICU. And we've had to turn some of the rooms in the COVID units, which are not set up for ICU patients, we've had to turn them into ICU rooms. And that's not exactly allowing us to give the safest care.
Aaron, every day you head into what some are calling a sort of, you know, war zone. You're there, you see the worst of things, people who are sadly not going to make it or who don't make it. And I wonder, you know, you're doing this battle to fight the virus with all you have, but what's your biggest fear going in? Is it burnout? Are you afraid that, you know, you're not going to have the capacity to do it? Are you afraid you're going to catch this dreadful disease? I mean, how do you manage?
I feel like probably all nurses feel the same. I don't fear for myself. I fear for my family. We don't know the long-term effects of coronavirus, and I'm a sole supporter of four children. So I'm afraid that I'm going to bring it home and something bad will happen to them. And like you said, I do feel like I'm not enough, and I worry that maybe I'll be so exhausted I'll take a wrong step and it costs somebody's life. It's not like we're on a manufacturing line and we're putting together car parts. We're dealing with human life. And I think Ronnie said it so perfectly when she said that people on the outside are calling it a hoax and they're not wearing face masks, they're not keeping social distancing. It's such a slap in the face to all of us healthcare workers that are already exhausted. And I have my own family members telling me things like thin the herd, when the herd that they're talking about are actual humans. I mean, I have held human people's life when they're passing, and there's nothing quite like it. These patients are dying, and they're dying alone, and nobody should have to go through that.
It's awful. Aaron, do you see a light at the end of the tunnel, or It's going to be a rough few months, and I know the fall is just around the corner.
I mean, we've been doing this for 6 months, and it doesn't feel like we're getting more support that we need. So it's causing nurses to not want to be nurses anymore. If anything, I feel like it's going to be getting worse. I hope that the public listens to our message and wears a mask and practices social distancing, and I hope that hospitals hear us and they stop laying off nurses and they start, you know, bringing in more able-bodied nurses to help us all.
I want to thank you, but I can't even imagine being in a situation like that when you've got lives in your hands. Specifically, whatever it is that you do affects the people's lives in those wards, in the ICU, in the hospital beds, on the ventilators. It's so much of a responsibility, and I want to thank you for taking time out to talk to us about it. Aaron McIntosh, a rapid response nurse over at Riverside Community Hospital, and Ronnie Cosmala, a nurse who was, up until now, at Pacifica Hospital out in the San Fernando Valley. Thanks to you both.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
going to do it for us today. By the way, there is another protest tomorrow at Riverside Community. This is a 3-hour picket between 11 and 2 tomorrow at Riverside Community Hospital to decry the deaths of a couple of people there because of lack, what they say is a lack of PPE, personal protection equipment, and we'll follow that as well as we move on. Next week on this program, labor, racial justice, environmental groups, they're all planning for some action on Monday. We'll have that for you as well. Baseball is back, but you're not. How the Dodgers are taking a cardboard cutout of you to the ball game for a price. We're online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Share your thoughts with us, your hopes, your dreams, your complaints. kcrw.com/greaterLA. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your ears and for your time today. Have a great evening.